have no idea how this episode ends because it just fades to silence.
Double flip off.
I'm Zach.
I'm Riff.
And I'm Kevin.
And here we are again. How's it going, guys?
Yeah, I'm pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah. Everything been pretty video games in your life?
More or less.
Yeah. I mean, pretty video game. One particular video game is for the past week or so.
What video game have you been playing nonstop for the past week or
Legend
so?
Legend of Grimrock.
Oh, yeah?
Yep.
I played a little bit of that. You played a lot of it.
Yeah, it's good. I'm enjoying it.
Is that all you've been doing?
Well, that didn't work.
Yeah, that didn't work pretty much.
Writing single-sentence jokes about monsters
from
8 years ago.
The jokes are from 8 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
That's impressive.
Yeah, they're like mostly Seinfeld references and
old vaudeville bits.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
You know.
From that vaudeville, the 2003 vaudeville revival. Yeah. Start talking, and I will pull you off stage with a cane if you say something stupid about Legend of Grimrock.
Dang, are we in the right section of the show already?
Heading right to it.
Well, all right.
I'm in the fart section of the show.
Hmm.
Every section of the show is the fart section of the show, guys.
Let's see what to say.
It's dungeon crawly.
Dungeon crawly. Very, very gritty, very mappy.
Gritty?
Grid.
Oh, gritty. Gritty. Okay.
So everything falls in within the like 10x10 room kind of guide sort of thing?
I don't know if it's 10x10, but
I mean, that's
everything is
literally
squares.
Specified. Maybe all your characters are mice.
Yeah.
The snails are pretty big. So this is
a
room is about
snails.
The size of a snail or four skeletons.
Well, a square is about the size of it.
Well, yeah, but I mean, the skeleton, if you're mice, are they mouse skeletons?
They're human-sized mice skeletons. Human-shaped.
Human-shaped.
Mouse skeletons.
Yeah. Mouse skeletons.
Mouse-sized human skeletons.
There we go. Okay.
Yeah, everything's really beautiful. The lighting is great, and the textures are great, and the monsters are cool.
I mean, that'd be a really confusing owl pellet if it had a tiny human skeleton.
Oh, wow.
Like, whoa.
So that'd be dissecting that in high school science class. And
this owl feeds entirely on homunculi.
Yeah.
What does it mean for it to have good lighting? Because it's not like an FPS, right?
Like it's, but I mean, it's presented like one.
Yeah,
it's a fully 3D rendering.
I mean, the light flickers and casts realistic shadows. And actually there is one interesting thing that happened to me. I started when the game first starts out, you have to carry around and manage all your own torches. You can grab torches off the walls and they sit in your inventory until you need
them. Does that change later?
You eventually get a light spell.
Okay.
Which is dimmer than a torch, but it means that one of your characters is no longer devoted to filling every single inventory slot with torches.
The burned out torches doubled as rocks.
Yeah, I did use
triggering
those a lot
plates
too. Actually,
stuff,
I've been keeping like a handful of the burned out ones on hand just so I don't have to use up all my rocks.
I haven't really found inventory space to be that big of a limiting factor so far. Because, I mean, there's stuff that you just obviously don't want, like every shield from every skeleton.
Right.
Could those not also be used as rocks?
Once your guys start wearing heavier armor, it becomes a little more of an issue. And once you're carrying around a lot of food.
Oh, because you have encumbrance.
Yeah.
So
nothing says fun like encumbrance limits.
But what I was, the little story I was about to tell, I got into a fight with one of these things. You probably haven't encountered them yet. They're like these sort of ghost knights that are all on fire and they shoot fireballs at you.
Wow.
Got into a fight with one of them, and when I killed him, everything, like the entire screen just went black, because in the middle of the fight, my light spell had worn off, and the monster was the only light source in the room.
Huh.
I thought that was pretty cool. It's the first time I think I've ever seen an actual fire creature actually emitting realistic light in the simulation.
You don't think that generally happens in a first-person video game? I don't know.
I feel like not. Maybe more recent ones. I haven't played a lot of the very recent FPSs like Doom 3 or things where that situation
I don't think anything is ever
happen.
On fire in Doom 3.
More like the flying skull.
There are those robots that are made
fire.
Out of flashlights.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely light emitted from models and various FPSs and stuff.
Hmm.
Like somebody built a model of a torch.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty sweet. The difficulty curve has seemed nice and smooth so far. I mean, there's a lot of fights that first time I encounter them, I'm like, how the fuck am I going to get through this? But You know, you've got a save that you reload two or three times and you find the trick or you find the correct place to run to. And
I really want a fucking quick save and quick load button. That is a thing that I think I will just wait for to play any more of it.
That would understandably be cool, but I think I would end up not using it because I have two different saves that I rotate between in different situations. Like I have a save that I use for my main save, and then I have a save that I use when I'm fumbling around working on a puzzle, so that once I solve the puzzle, I can go back and resolve it quickly on my main save, so I haven't used up all that food.
Yeah, it is a, like,
that seems very scummy.
Posted to, it's a to very Twitter that, yeah, game, after the second level or so, it really becomes a game about saving and loading.
Yeah.
Like, the thing that kind of bugs me about it is that, like, the fights are very just RPG system-y, where you miss a lot and your weapons do like a range of damage, and they hit the monsters miss a lot and the monsters do a range of damage. And so a given fight, it's kind of like a coin flip whether you're going to win it or not.
Well, it is if you're, like I think you said at dinner, that you're mostly fighting things by just facing them and clicking them.
Yeah, I mean, that dancing around and stabbing them in the side before they...
to be doing it.
Man, that is so obnoxious.
What is, explain this dancing around thing.
Okay, well, so...
You're, like, moving from square to square?
Yeah, if you've got, like, a 2x2 space, like a slightly larger room...
Yeah,
then
20x20, you mean?
Yeah, sure.
With four orcs and four pies.
Then you can hit a guy and then skint to the left so that you're a space diagonal from him and he can't hit you.
Okay.
And then he moves horizontally or vertically, and then before he gets the chance to attack after that movement, you hit him again.
So it's real world, not turn based.
Yeah, it's real time. It works like the games that we played early as assignments, like the Eye of the Beholder. The Eyes of the Beholder. Yeah.
Okay.
And the rogue class can eventually pick up a skill that if you manage to get behind something, you can backstab it for extra damage. And for the most part, all the monsters move and attack slightly differently from each other. So there's some subtle variations. Like there's a giant crab monster that moves sideways relative to its attack face.
Sure.
And there's an ogre that can attack as part of its rotation movement instead of having to rotate and then attack.
Oh, wow.
So you have to adopt different ogre tactics.
Exactly.
I don't know about that, man. I feel like it's one of those cases where I feel like I'm playing the box that the game came in rather than the game. Because
you thought the cover art was cool?
Yeah.
Did it have an anime elf? I think it's set up that
it has
this
both
is
kinds of dwarf.
That this is how, like, because there are situations where it seems obvious that this fight is harder than the previous one against the same monster, because in this one it's more difficult to find a large space to fight it in, or this fight is more difficult.
Nothing
because
prevents you from running into yet another group of monsters, though, when you're moving around.
Well, except they're all in like a fixed location, yeah. And you can close doors, and monsters don't seem to be able to open doors. And
they don't tend to. They will wander, but they
don't chase you.
They
until
don't
you've
chase you.
Them.
Yeah, some of them will. Some of them apparently have like a distance at which point they can see you and will start chasing you. But yeah, especially the earlier ones don't track you very well. So there's a fight against two of those fire dudes, just recently that I was actually talking about on the forums. Cause I, at the time I wasn't sure how I was going to deal with it, but, basically what I ended up doing was luring the first one into the room and just doing the fight two or three times until I managed to defeat the first one before the second one noticed and also wandered into the room. Because once you've got more than one monster fighting you in the room,
the movement tactics are much more
difficult.
Limited. Huh. So that seems like kind of a aggro one monster, fight them. Kind of.
I mean, there's just a lot of like, strategy. Oh, here's my combat tactic. Fight monsters on the other side of a door until you lose some hit points, and then close the door, sleep for 8 hours, open the door, hit them again.
Does that actually work?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, really?
I've never gone that far. I have on occasion been backed up against a stairwell and gone upstairs and hung out for a while and then went back.
You were fighting the robots that were trying to protect you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's neat. I don't know that it represents that genre of game coming back in force.
It's certainly a niche sort of thing.
I would enjoy, and I think there's no reason that somebody couldn't do this, I would enjoy like maybe procedurally generated dungeons.
On the one hand, that would be cool because they'd all be new, but on the other hand, I think the part of the game that is interesting more so than the combat is the puzzles that have been set up.
Yeah, but you could procedurally generate puzzles. They might be shitty puzzles.
Yeah.
Would you rather solve an infinite number of shitty puzzles or one really good crafted puzzle?
Yeah, just the one.
Well, fine. I'm not taking your game with me to a desert island because there's no variety there. Also, there's no place to plug in the PC.
Depends on whether I realize that there are more puzzles in the world or if it's the only thing I'm ever going to be able to play again. Because, like, if I'm on a desert island, I want a fucking procedurally generated puzzle.
Yeah, I think I would rather play NetHack than this on a desert island.
On a desert island.
So this is the same game for everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no variation at all.
And well, you can make a new party. There's definitely variation in the die rolls that you get. So some people probably die against the first snail because they get really unlucky.
Can you make escargot?
You eat snail, or maybe you're eating their shell.
Giant snail slice, I think is what it's called in the game.
Snail slice.
Actually, I think that's snail's lice, which actually it's a cut of a bug that was attached to the snail hairs.
Snail slice was a very unpopular beverage.
Yeah.
There's apparently a blueberry pie somewhere in the game, but I haven't found it yet. I only know about this because I read the Gourmet Gamer blog where they post recipes for things in video games.
They didn't have any snail slice. What else do you get? You get some mushroom.
There's the mushrooms off of the mushroom monsters, and then there's also
grim caps.
Yeah, there's grim caps. I've been resisting eating them because I think they might be an alchemy ingredient, but I haven't found a recipe for them yet.
I didn't find any recipes other than the single ingredient recipes for the stuff that you find that they tell you, that they spoil the recipes outright.
I think there's at least one more. I found an incomplete recipe that was like, okay, you need one of these and one of these and one of something else, but I haven't figured out what yet. And that my experimenting with that has been stymied by the fact that I haven't found even one of the second ingredient yet.
Oh, so. Wow.
The fact that if you are fast enough, you can, in the middle of a battle, have a guy brew some potions and hand them forward through the ranks and drink them, like, that just got...
I think that's weird, but on the other hand, you do have the thing hitting on you while you're brewing it.
Well,
it's not like an entirely menu-driven game.
Well, that's
what
I'm saying.
That with no time passing at all.
If you're fast enough, you can do it, which makes it like just this weird. Like playing optimally seems like a weird click fest.
Well, don't you? I mean, isn't playing optimally clicking on something and then retreating so it can't hit you?
Yeah.
Waiting until it moves closer, hitting it.
Waiting for the cooldown on your attack to.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I think I would rather just play it on easy and have the fights be a matter of preparation rather than tactics, personally.
What joy do you derive from it then? Solving the puzzles?
Dungeon.
So just like aromatic.
I have to say, yeah, well, just wandering around the dungeon is pretty enjoyable.
Yeah.
just the environments?
I wonder where this corridor goes.
The walls.
I wonder how wide this corridor is going to be.
The walls could use more texture variety, but they do switch out the texture sets every 3 or 4 levels, it seems like. Or at least around level 4 or 5, it changed to a different texture set. And then around, I think I'm at either 7 or 8 now, and it's still the same basic texture set, but they added a lot of more wall furniture, like tapestries and stuff that can appear.
Have you found the Grimrock?
I have.
You're
not
in Grimrock.
Yeah, I think you are.
You're
the
in
entire place.
Grimrock
you are
Mountain,
Grimrock.
Which is a mountain, and you're in a dungeon. You start at the top of the mountain, and if you make it to the bottom, you win your freedom. They like drop criminals into this dungeon tower.
Is the idea that there is no bottom though? Like, does it just keep going down?
No, I don't know. That's the legend.
Dungeon all the way down.
The legend is that you can get out, and then you're not only free.
Apparently there is a door at the bottom, but nobody has ever come out of it.
You get 40 crystal virgins.
Oh.
Crystal virgin was also a popular soft drink.
They'd be all pointy and hard.
Well, maybe Minotaurs are into that.
That's like why they're virgins.
Like, dating you is like constantly being in a china shop. What else has anybody been doing or playing or doing while playing?
Nothing new. Well, okay, that's not true. I went and saw Cabin in the Woods.
No spoilers, buddy. I still want to see it.
It is.
I don't know anything about it except that you don't want to be spoiled about it.
It's good. You should go see it.
Okay.
It was a pretty good date movie, actually.
Maybe I'll go with. Although, is it scary? Is it a scary thing?
Yeah, a little.
But Jenny probably won't want to see it.
She might. It's a Joss Whedon thing. Okay. So, you know, it is.
Oh, it was directed by Joss, like written
no,
by?
Written by.
Okay. It's a Joss Whedon joint.
It's a Joss Whedon joint. So it's got some of that flavor. So, you know, it is scarier than like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but it is. It's Whedon-y enough that it's.
Has Buffy the Vampire Slayer ever been even a little bit scary?
Yeah.
I watched all of them, and I don't think the guys in Hush.
Yeah.
Maybe were pretty scary.
Those were what I was thinking of. Like those guys creeped me.
They were sort of skinny men.
The gentlemen is what they're known as.
They had a lot of teeth. Sort of on the outside
and
of their face.
They smile all the time.
I don't know.
Weird.
And they float.
Ooh.
Yeah.
We all float down here. It's Johnny.
It's pretty creepy.
Who's Johnny in that? I
don't know.
Who's Johnny, she said.
So I'd finished Darkest Rising.
Hadn't you just started reading that at the last episode?
Yeah, I mean, it was short.
It's a really boring young adult novel. I see.
So
it's pretty good, though.
Yeah.
Have you read second in the series. The Hunger Games?
No, I'm trying to decide whether I want to see the movie Hunger Games before I read the book.
I'm trying to decide if I should maybe just read Battle Royale instead.
See, I thought it was the Hunger Games, which was a series of contests to see who was the most
more
hung.
I don't know. I'm not sure. There was that whole uproar about the black character. No being way. Black or whatever. I don't know.
Huh. Their nemesis was the black character.
In terms of games, nothing new really. I played some Super Meat Boy and got past the first zone, at which point it unlocks the evil version of the first zone. And I looked
as if originally it wasn't evil enough.
Right. And I looked on the leaderboards. There are 360 levels in that game. Yeah. It's like 180 levels and then 180 evil versions of the levels. I was like, holy
crap. Is this the one that
crap.
Has all different unlockable characters from other indie games?
Yes.
I remember reading something
three other dude
from Minecraft as a character.
Oh, yeah.
Do they play any differently? Like,
they have different abilities.
Yeah, they have abilities according to whatever they do in the game they're from.
And every level is beatable by...
Oh, I don't know about that.
I've heard is that every level is beatable, but some of them are made brokenly trivial.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
So I've only unlocked one guy from that game where nothing can hurt you.
Yeah. I've only unlocked one of them. It was like the Bit Trip Runner guy. So he's like floaty. Mm.
Did you guys play, it was a Flash game. I want to say that maybe it was a Nitrome joint.
Or Nitrome?
Nitrome?
Where it was like you were switching between a bunch of imaginary 8-bit games. Like you would go through these rifts and suddenly it would be, you would be moving as a spaceship instead of as a platform jumping guy.
Oh, I think I heard about weird. That, but I...
Same levels, or...?
Yeah. The levels were designed in ways, so, like, in order to get past this thing as a platform guy, you have to jump back to where you're a spaceship and shoot some of the blocks out of the way so that you can run out. It was pretty clever. I don't remember the name of it. I wish that I did.
Yeah,
I think I might have talked about it on a Video Games Hot Dog. Remember Video Games Hot Dog?
I do. So then in
does anybody remember laughter?
In other old news, I went back and started playing The Creeps again. There's a ton of levels on that game too that are like, I haven't even paid for the like content packs. I'm just going through the all the free stuff.
I finally bought the season pass and just have everything.
Yeah.
It reset at some point. There was some weird glitch that reset all my progress.
That sucks.
Made me sad.
Yeah, that's really annoying.
That has that tower defense problem where it'll be like, you'll play and not realize
that
you'll have a perfect game going up until wave 45 when you don't quite kill a boss, and then you're just like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, that is, well, because we're so insistent on the perfect games, that's definitely aggravating.
Seems like, I don't know, does there really need to be that many waves in a level?
No, and I think that's part of the problem, is that the level design does not take into account that this takes 20 minutes to beat, and it's just not fun. That was something that was...
I mean, it's fun the first time.
Well, kind of.
It's a more... The Creeps is a more active tower defense game because there's like the scenery that you can... You can blow up the scenery to get more money, and you kind of have to figure out like how to make the first waves take longer so that you can blow up more scenery, so that you can buy more Coke, so that you can make the waves take longer. But yeah, once you get it down, once you get your engine going, it's just a matter of like, all right, how do I win these early levels while still having the right kind of firepower to defeat these bosses, which just have like 100 times as many hit points as the regular creeps?
Right.
And the answer is more often than not, oh, I guess I can't. I didn't, at least.
You can't? You didn't?
Yeah. I meant I didn't.
You can't done.
You didn't.
Did that.
You're enjoying it, though?
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun, actually.
Do you get the new towers with the free content? Like the thing that shoots hearts that turn into other hearts?
I have not encountered any of those. I played some of the Christmas levels.
The gun that shoots owl pellets.
And like there were presents that...
Tiny man gets out.
You can blow up the presents and it leaves behind a tower.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So that was something that was new. But not
some of them contain a towel.
Oh, yeah?
We should make a towel defense game.
Towel.
Towel defense.
That was Superman's brother.
Yeah.
That would be really funny. If you are like the wetness.
His philosophical Chinese brother.
You're the wetness and you're
Dowell. They just called him Rod.
Or you're being attacked by a flood and you have to defend yourself with towels.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's good. Yeah. It's like you're sandbagging the entire time.
Teabagging.
And I have continued to play Draw Something. Like I'll wake up in the morning and play through all my games. It's still pretty fun.
Okay.
Our friend Dave was talking about that in chat today and how annoyed he is by all the people that are
using just putting the words
just in writing it. In the word, and if it turns out you intend to actually play the game, then they just quit because their intention is to get high on the score table without actually having to play.
Yeah, I don't play with anybody that I don't know, and that solves that problem.
I mean, I said this before. I wish that they had a system for detecting when people just wrote words in it and then just
ban them
like
from
burned
life.
Their phones. Just like triggered, did that infinite loop with a poke in it that just sets the retina display on fire. Yeah.
Yeah.
In related news, I've changed my name to Dr. Awesome Thing.
Oh yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Not really.
The medical doctor or
no, he's a doctor of awesomeology.
Okay.
Cool.
Awesomeology sounds like that sounds like a thing. Like I study bones. And
some really cool bones.
Bones and mushrooms.
And I guess technically I've been playing...
Osso-mycology.
Osso-mycology.
Dr. Osso-mycology.
I guess technically I've been playing Minecraft, sort of.
Which... All you've been doing is sitting there at your stupid blaze farm.
Yeah, making all kinds of enchanted picks. I've got almost a full chest of enchanted picks. Well, I mean, why not, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you're working on something, there's no reason to not have the tiny window open on your second
actually build
monitor or whatever.
You're just gathering for the sake of gathering.
I'm not even gathering. I'm
got a problem.
I'm prepping for gathering.
You're getting a lot of blaze rods.
Yeah, jeez. I had to make more chests to hold all the blaze rods.
I've changed my name to Blaze Rod S.
What have you been up to?
I just changed my name a lot.
that's your whole
back and forth between different things. All
activity
day, every day. I learned that there is a type of garage door opener called the Zap Jack Shaft, which is my new favorite NPC name, Zap Jack Shaft. So that's pretty cool.
Jackshaft is just not okay.
Jackshaft is a great word. It's like, I mean, so you imagine that, like, all right, so I've got the handle, I've got the scissor, and I've got the jackshaft.
Jackshaft.
And these are the three things that allow me to lift cars.
What about Lars Beat Off? Is that okay?
You have to go down to Home Depot and get a tub of whacking grease for your jackshaft.
Yeah. Yeah, of course, Lars Doff, and his middle name is Benvolio. Lars Beat Off.
Mm-hmm. Lars Beedhoff in public. Lars Beedhoff live at the Apollo. I played a game on Saturday where you go to a bar where there are skeletons all over everything and have way too much to drink, and then spend all of Sunday hungover. Yeah. But on Sunday, I decided to try and chip away at my hangover by finishing Mass Effect 3. So I played through the rest of Mass Effect 3, and now I know why everyone is so upset. I actually did quit and walk away for a couple of hours in the middle of the very, very last actual hard fight, because it just got to the point where I no longer believe that the game, after you die 5 times in a particular situation, makes itself easier on you, because I died probably 50 times.
Wow.
In this one encounter, until I finally figured out that you didn't actually have to kill the guys that were coming after you. You just had to survive long enough for this event to trigger and then run through a hail of bullets to get to this thing, to this control panel. So just the way that I finally won it was by just running around in a circle.
Everybody knows that hail is actually small white rocks.
Diving into various places.
Tiny golf balls.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe that's what I should have been paying. I should have looked up. The shots were coming from the roof.
Yeah.
No, there are these stupid banshee enemies that like teleport all the time, and they can like one hit get rid of all your shields. If they get close to you, and if they put 2 of them at once against you and there's anything else on the screen, you're just fucked.
Because you have no shields?
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know, maybe it's also because I'm terrible at video games. No, it doesn't matter how many shields you have, right? Like, in the amount of time that it takes you to kill one of them, the other one has killed you 50 times. And it's like your squad mates are just dead, always, because the things just tear through them. It's crazy. Huh. Stupid banshees. Stupid dresses. And then the ending is real dumb. And here's my take on the ending kerfuffle of Mass Effect 3. So there's a bunch of people saying, this is not really a spoiler. There's a bunch of people who are upset because they think that the ending implies, because of something that happened in some earlier DLC to one of the earlier games, that you have wiped out every planet and creature in the galaxy. Which is pretty clearly not the story that the ending is trying to tell. And so, you know, it's like, well, but this is what happens when you do X, and you've done something that is similar to X, and I think it's fair to give them the benefit of the doubt.
Is that the majority of the complaining?
No. The majority of the complaining is that the ending is pretty grim if you actually think about the repercussions of what was going on. It's like cursory. And there's some shit that happens that just doesn't make any sense at all. It's like, all right, so here's this guy that was in this place, and now all of a sudden he's running from something, but where is he going, and why, and how did the people that were next to me 5 minutes ago suddenly end up in halfway across the galaxy, headed to some random place for no reason?
Does it turn out that planets are just juggling balls?
No.
Does
no, nothing. No one would ever have that idea. I'm sorry, buddy.
Does it
and
turn
therefore
out?
You do not exist.
It's not. Yeah. So here's the thing, though. It's a. To me, the ending cutscene of a video game is not any more important than any of the other cutscenes of the video game, which is to say that they are not important at all.
Wow, that's a strange.
So here's
point
the thing.
Of view.
You remember how awesome the ending of Diablo
was? That is
was?
Exactly what I'm thinking
okay.
of.
Okay, yeah. So the ending of Diablo doesn't even care what fucking gender or class you were. So, like, it doesn't make any sense as a story. This is what I wrote down on my notes. Story is dumb. And this is my case in point here. This is what happened while I was playing this video game. I accidentally got into a conversation with one of my lady alien crew members that resulted in her becoming my alien girlfriend. So I was like, okay. So it gets down to the, like, you know, you're just talking, you're exploring conversation trees, and then suddenly it's like, oh, okay. I've gotten to the point where I say, hey, let's fuck later, or I just want to be friends. Sorry, bitch. And I was like, oh, okay. I guess I'll see what that does. So then a little while later, it results in an optional sex scene that was sort of weird. And then right before the end, when you go talk to her before you go out for the final battle, there's a little scene where she holds your hand and makes out with you, except that you've got your helmet on, and so she just sort of sinks her face into your helmet, and you can't... It's like, oh,
they don't
right.
remove the hat.
This is a dumb, dumb, dumb thing in a video game. That's
I remember
happening
seeing
right now.
A clip somewhere on YouTube of God, what's the character's name?
The main character,
yeah,
Shepard.
Shepard, that's right. Yeah. Shepard at a bar drinking with his helmet on. What are you
because
doing?
It was like because when you're running around, if you're not on your ship, you're dressed in whatever your non-civilian clothes right. are, and if you have a helmet on, then it just shows you with the fucking helmet on. This is why I can't summon up any outrage about, like how it just doesn't matter that, oh, like, there's a gay... So the way that the game clues you into there's a gay dude for you to fuck now if you want your guy to be gay is, like, you walk in and this guy in a particular part of the ship is just listening on repeat to what I thought was, like... I was like, is this guy just, like, listening really loudly to some gay soap opera? But it wasn't a gay soap opera. It was a recording of it, when his husband died, that he's talking about. It was like, oh, okay. I guess that was signaled pretty well that if you want to fuck a dude, this is the dude that you should fuck. It is so hard for me to understand why, like, the parents groups get upset about there being sex in these video games, and anybody being upset about anything being represented or not, is that it is all so fucking dumb that I cannot imagine anybody caring about it at all for any reason.
Well, it's because all the people that care about the idea of it and not the reality.
It is dumb enough that you would, like... The way that typical interactions work in a role-playing game like this is that, oh, you know, I just met you, but I am totally going to risk my life to perform this inane, trivial task for you, mm-hmm. even though it makes no sense that of all the people in the galaxy that this would have anything to do with me, right? It compresses that kind of crazy shit into conversations that there are, like, tropes for, but, like... Forming a meaningful personal relationship with somebody, like, over the course of a game, you can get a sense, you, the player, can get a sense of a character's personality, and you're like, you know, I really like the way this character is written. Like, you know, there's like a dude that dies in Mass Effect 3, and I was like, wow, I'm kind of sad. Like, that was pretty good. Like, that actually tugged on some heartstrings a little bit. But then it was like, then somebody made out with the middle of my helmet, right? Like... And there's just so much random geometry clipping in the middle of it. Like, it's, get off, god damn it.
So, but is that them just being sloppy or lazy or something? Or
it's
is
not,
it?
I mean, it's, it, to me.
Because if they had taken, like, if they didn't take you out of the moment, if your character took off the helmet so that you could get a kiss, like, would attention to that
no,
kind of
this
detail?
Is still the love of my life, who I have spoken to for about 6 minutes in total. Right. It is nonsense. It is not, I don't think, possible to create a meaningful narrative about a romantic relationship in the context of, like, the sidelines of a game like
well,
this.
Well, but I mean, aren't the stakes so high that that kind of thing would happen? Like,
I mean, if they had written, like, if it was set up that there could have been some stuff going on between the two of you off screen, then that would make more sense. If there was a fade to black at some point and it said, I mean, 1 month later.
Or during all the times when your character is pooping, he's also on the phone with her. And yeah, since they don't want to show you pooping, it is also just implied that you've spent a bunch of time
but
talking to your new alien girlfriend.
In the midst of this, like, really deep crisis, right? Like the bonds that you form in the middle of those kinds of situations are going to be more intense. Just by the nature of the context
sure.
in which they were
sure.
formed, right?
Sure.
Plus,
just,
I mean, you probably have
so silly
theoretical history going back to the previous two games with these people.
Yeah, but it does. I mean,
I mean, you personally won't know about that,
right?
But.
I didn't import a save, so right. I don't know, and I don't remember if I. No. I tried the romance option that I picked was the one girl that all you can do is, like, you have dinner with her once, and then you watch her get. Turned into, like, soup for providing
for your next dinner
nutrient paste to, you know, I would like to remind everybody that the way that Mass Effect 2 ended was you having to fight a giant robot skeleton that was made of ground up people.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's the boss. I mean, that's the final conflict on that. And you know what? That's pretty fucking stupid, if you think about it.
It depends. I mean, it could be pretty epic. You're fighting the remains of the day.
You're fighting the Cider House rules.
You're fighting my own private Idaho.
The skeleton's name is Howard's End. Yeah, I don't know, man. It was a bad ending. My impression, my opinion, bad ending. I certainly think that filing a complaint against BioWare with the Better Business Bureau is a little bit of an overreaction.
Did that happen, or are you just talking about the Capcom?
No, false advertising because of some sentence somewhere that said you control the beginning, middle, and end of an epic sweeping space story.
Well, but you do. There are multiple variant endings.
They are basically identical. Well, is another that's
true,
problem
but...
that people have. Yeah. And it's a choice that you make at the very end.
Over
well, right. Look, I don't know why I'm not even on the side of the argument that I'm taking right now.
Yeah.
The side of the argument.
Also, it ends with this pop-up that's a single sentence. It's like, hey, buy some DLC. Woo! Just like flipping you off with both fingers and then restoring you to an earlier save. I can understand why people are a little upset about that. You know, but I don't know. The idea that it somehow retroactively ruins these people's experience of playing all three of the games and, you know, it's like, oh, I'm never giving those assholes at BioWare another cent. It's like, you know what?
That kind of statement is just obnoxious.
Yes, yes, you are. You're going to buy everything that they produce because they make fucking good video games.
Yep.
And one dumb cutscene does not really do any irreparable harm.
I mean, the fourth Ender's Game book was okay, but it was not great. It certainly didn't ruin my enjoyment of the first one.
Well, but would it prevent you from buying other Orson Scott Card books?
Like the fifth Ender's Game book? I mean,
yeah, like a sixth or seventh one.
Or other series?
You know, probably
maybe.
Not.
Sure, but. Not out of disgust or spite. Yeah, just because, I guess I don't trust him to write a good book anymore. And, you know, that's fair. If you don't think BioWare writes good endings, then don't buy BioWare
games. Yeah, so
but that doesn't...
We're framing the players in this sort of, like, entitled sort of light, but maybe it is sort of a question of, like, they feel like their trust in BioWare to provide a compelling story that has a satisfying end has been violated, and what the frustrations that they're voicing are like, I can't trust them to do this anymore.
Sure, but what you do in that situation is you vote with your wallet and not be a little baby about it.
Well, but you know, saying that I'm voting with my wallet is the right of every person that has free speech, right?
Right, yeah, and me ignoring you because I think you're acting like an entitled twat is my right, too.
Sure.
You know, I mean, although I'm not ignoring you, I'm talking about you on a podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know how I feel about people complaining about things on the internet.
Right.
Right.
It's like, know, Hitler.
You can't... You can't, because there are 100 of you, assume that you represent a majority of people.
Well, unless there are only 100 people left.
That's true.
Because of everybody dying. Yeah,
because Hitler.
Because of the Mass Effect.
Because Hitler won. Ah, boy. Yeah, you know.
We do all have these cute little mustaches now.
Mass Effect 3 was fun, and the ending did not make it any less fun for me. So,
yep.
Just saying.
Well, all right.
Also, there's this problem, right, where you come up with this big, epic... My assertion is of this, the same as basically of everything. The thing that makes Mass Effect a cool, well-realized world is not the story of the things that happen to the main characters. It is the details about the world that you see as exemplified by the way that the characters act as sort of representatives of their race, the things that they talk about, the things that you find laying around on planets, the little things, the things that you read in the codex, mm-hmm. You know, the extra detail that they give setting up the world, setting up the sort of backstory and atmosphere of it. It is not a sweet spaceship chase, right? I mean, that's just a cutscene. That's... And I don't know why, to me, like, a cutscene, a big... sweeping epic cutscene does not add any more to the experience for me than a paragraph of text about the way that one particular sawmill worked on one particular forested moon. You know, it's
even though it is placed as the last thing that you do or see,
it doesn't matter, right? Like there's nothing more important about the last one than any other one. So the way that I see it,
when
like,
you read a book, the ending could just be another paragraph.
Doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter.
You don't like it's not, to be wrapped up. You don't like it to be.
I like for the story to be pretty good about what happened to the characters, you know, and it's like people, I think in a lot of ways want every movie to end like Animal House, where there's just a freeze frame and then there's a thing that shows everyone that they ever saw throughout the entire thing and explains exactly what happened to them.
I don't know if that's true. I think they just want closure of some kind.
But here's the problem. It's not over because a bunch of fucking expansion content is going to come out, right? So you can't provide closure and also run this thing like it's...
But you can't... I mean, they have provided reasonable closure at the end of the previous two games and there was more content coming out. Like, that doesn't seem like a realistic problem.
This is ending the series and not ending the game.
Right. So you have a somewhat more compelling ending, but you still leave open some options for some DLC gameplay.
I don't think that, like, yeah, man, I don't know. I really don't. When I read a book, I don't really care what the last few paragraphs are. Like, because I'm done experiencing it at that point, right? Like, it's not, the end is not the culmination of the story. The end is the point at which I don't get to read any more story.
Well, it's okay. The last few paragraphs, maybe not necessarily, but the closing ideas are the ones that people care about, right? Like, what has this story been about?
Right. But the cutscene is the last couple of paragraphs.
Right. So,
I don't know, man. Like, I can't think of a video game where the ending of the game was anything other than a just like, oh, this is the thing that's on the screen after I'm done playing. Right? It doesn't, like, the ending of it is beating the last boss or whatever. And it's like, okay, good guys win. I beat the last boss. Like, I can't think of a book where I was just, oh, this ending was really satisfying. This really wrapped everything up and was just great. I mean, because it's always just like, and then everybody died, or, and then everybody lived happily ever after. And it's just not about how the story ends. It's about, I mean, it's like the old fucking cliche. It's the journey and not the destination, right? Because the destination is stupid. The destination is a blank page at the end where nothing happens because the fucking story's over. So, and the ending is just the page before that. The ending, the last page of a book is just the page before that blank page that means it's time to stop reading.
This explains why you like Neal Stephenson so much.
Well, I'm saying it doesn't fucking matter. It doesn't matter that the endings of his books are stupid because the books are awesome. It doesn't matter that Stephen King is bad at writing endings to books because I think it is impossible to write a satisfying ending to the kind of books that they write. And I don't care. I don't think they should stop writing them because of that. And I don't think that the endings ruin.
I disagree, but I can't come up with a counterexample off the top of my head.
I mean, Lord of the Rings ends and then has
200 more pages 40
appendices of boring shit that you don't care about. Right? Because, I mean, the end of the story of Lord of the Rings is, all right, there goes the ring into the volcano. Guess everything is going to be okay. And then there's just a bunch of shit that you don't care about.
I mean,
and that's what the ending cutscene is.
I just read The Sense of an Ending, right? And it has a pretty satisfying arc that then has an ending which recontextualizes the entire book that you have just read. And you're like, oh, okay.
Sure.
That was really satisfying.
I mean, I guess Mass Effect 3 could have ended with, and it was all a dream, or it turns out he was Bruce Willis the entire time.
No, it doesn't have to. I'm not saying that that's the only way that it can make sense. But like,
that twist is a thing that it makes the ending totally different and a different, like, if not everything needs to end in a way that makes it so it wasn't what you thought it was the entire time either, right? Like, it...
Okay, but then, like, if everything was just presented to you on a sort of crystal platter and there was nothing that was unusual or interesting about it throughout the course of it, then I would say that the story wasn't very good, probably, right?
Based on what you've just said, yes. If a story has nothing interesting happen in it, then yes, it is not a good story. I would agree with that.
If everything is just vanilla, like presented to you with no kind of depth, right? There's nothing that like you discover, like interesting things could happen in it. Like, you know, like the main character could get hit by a car, but like, it wasn't like, there's just like nothing.
Does every story need to be like a Seinfeld episode where it wraps up in a way that suddenly explains why all of the things that happened were interrelated, or makes up some dumb thing that means that they were all interrelated? I mean, I'm just saying that I don't believe that I have ever played a video game or read a book where the like literally the way in which it ended made any difference at all. Huh. Because the way in which it ends is just the thing that you see on the way out of an experience. And it like...
So Ender's Game, the ending didn't change for you what the book was about? Like, the revelation of what has been going on? Like, again, that's sort of a twist, I guess.
Okay, the ending did, but the pages after that where it talks about him getting in a spaceship and leaving because he's sad... didn't fucking matter at all.
Well, I think that was even framed as an epilogue, right?
The like revelation, that is, right. The ending cutscene of a video game is the fucking epilogue. And in this case,
you think so?
Yes. And in this case, it is framed as an epilogue too, because it's, you're not even in it, right? And so that is what I'm saying. All of the stuff that happens to the main character is part of the story, and the ending is just some shit that doesn't matter, because the ending is just a thing that you're watching after the story is over. Right. And it can be an entertaining thing on its own. It can be pretty, I guess. It can be like oh man, I'm sure glad that guy got kicked in the nuts. I was hoping he'd get
kicked
in the nuts.
You're saying it's an epilogue, but you make a choice at the end which determines what you see in that what you're calling an epilogue, which I would say is still more like, if you make a choice, the results of your action are still part of the story, is what I would argue.
Sure.
Right, so I disagree that that ending cutscene is an epilogue. It might be an epilady.
Okay.
Yeah,
I mean,
or an epicure.
We have entirely different approaches to stories in video game, and I think yours is more akin to everybody else's. So I'm sure that listeners are getting frustrated because they think, of course, a dumb ending can retroactively ruin a fun experience I had, because that seems to be the way everybody feels about it.
And I mean, I think I'm more holistic about it. I think I'm like. Yeah, we're going to talk about the assignment, and I thought the ending was kind of dumb, but like, that didn't change the fact that I thought the game was cool.
Exactly.
Right? But I can still be upset that the game, the ending is dumb.
It doesn't retroactively take away the fun that you've previously had, but I think it's still valid to be bummed that the ending was shitty when the rest of the game was cool, because then it feels like you've gotten cheated out of something that should have been cool.
Do you not feel like the game we're making now has a cool ending?
Oh, I think people are going to fucking hate it.
Oh, but it's a cool ending, right?
Sure. Yeah. Okay. I mean, okay. Yes. But here's the thing. It doesn't fucking matter what happens in that cutscene. It does not matter what happens in that cutscene, because the next time you go to play the game, you're back at your last save before that cutscene played.
Sure.
Just like in every video game, right? Because the game ended at the point where that cutscene started.
Except for our last save is well before point.
Yeah. But I mean, it is in Mass Effect 3 also.
Is it?
Right? Yeah, to actually go through and see the alternate endings, which are... really infuriatingly similar.
Yeah.
Which is a thing that people have a lot of complaints about.
I heard, yeah.
What it is a lot of is sitting and reading a book while you wait for the things that you have to interact with to pop up in the middle of a really, really long, drawn out, non-interactive thing.
Interesting.
That's playing out. Yeah, to me,
maybe that's what people's resistance is. It's like you made me sit through all of this bullshit, and it was a waste of my time, right? Like maybe that's the anger that people are feeling. It's like there was 40 minutes of cutscene, and it was dumb. Right, like if you're gonna make me sit through 40 minutes of cutscene, make it awesome. Make it something that I'm like that is like epic and sweeping. And
so
like,
I guess for my money, there has never been a non-dumb cutscene. I hate cutscenes. I absolutely hate them. A game that is mostly cutscenes is a game that I do not want to play. Like,
what about cutscene in the game?
Yeah, it's great. Ironically, And it is just because of the way that I feel about the way that games present stories. Like, I can't skip them because I don't want to fucking miss something, but I am angry every time a game takes control for me to tell a shitty fucking video game story. I am angry. I was constantly mad at it because I just wanted to play a fucking game about possessing objects and making things happen. And every goddamn time the little audio cue popped up that was like, oh, you're not going to play a game until you get through all these dialogue bubbles. I was just like, fuck you, game. You know? And so the fact that the ending cutscene of a game is dumb is so not surprising to me and just has no impact at all on my enjoyment of the game. Because the opening cutscene was dumb and all of the interstitial cutscenes were dumb because video game stories are fucking dumb. And...
so, I mean, just without any reservation, they're just all dumb.
Yeah. Video games are an extremely poor medium for telling the kind of linear story that people want out of a movie or a book or anything else. Hmm. I believe that as strongly as it is possible to believe something. Huh. And so it just, like, I don't know. This one was dumber than usual,
you like
right?
The end of Diablo.
Yeah. That was... kind of a, it was an interesting twist, right? It was dark. It was not like endings that are not happy endings are more satisfying to me than not satisfying at all, I guess. You know, I think that like endings can only do harm, I guess, is like there's never been an ending that made anything better about the thing that was ending.
Because if you'd enjoyed the story in the first place, you would rather be able to continue experiencing that world.
Well, it's just that I don't think that fixed point at which control is taken away or at which the action goes away is... I don't think anything that happens after that is really important.
I mean, I think if you're going to have a story at all, then you need some kind of conclusion and tie-up moment at the end of it.
Yeah, I disagree. I mean, I like my experience of playing Skyrim, like I don't remember how the main quest line ended. You know, the way that Skyrim ended for me is one day I didn't play Skyrim anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and I probably the end of the sweeping epic story of my character was maybe I picked some lilacs and then made a potion. The end. Awesome. You know, I mean, those kinds of games are especially like it gets in the way.
I feel like those games are open ended, is how I would describe them, which implies that they don't really have endings. But almost, I would say most other games have endings. Most of the games that have story have an ending, right?
Sure.
You know,
and it's always dumb, just like the whole story up to that point.
Wow, that's super frustrating to hear you say.
You're the most important person in the universe, incidentally. Again. It's you. Guess what? Prophecies were all talking about you.
I hope so. I'm the PC. Wouldn't that be weird? There's a game we should make. A game where the guy that all the prophecies are pointing to is that guy over there, not the guy you're playing.
You're just playing Kif?
Yeah.
I mean... that's a story that you could tell, right? I mean, that's like, you could, yeah, I don't know, man. To me, the overarching story of something like The Sopranos just doesn't really matter because that's not what you remember. What you remember is the characters and the way that the characters interacted with each other and the quirks and foibles. You don't remember...
Sure, but you can't have a show of just that. You need an overarching plot to make those situations possible.
It is necessary, but it can be as cursory as it needs to be, and the less it changes, the less it interferes with the things that make something like that compelling and interesting.
Yeah.
I remember a lot of characters from The Sopranos, and I don't remember, apart from like a scene of where somebody gets killed or whatever, I don't remember any fucking thing about anything that happened in the overarching storyline of The Sopranos.
But maybe that's just your
sure
particular way of interacting.
Yeah, which is why I don't give a shit about these ending cutscenes. And I, you know, to me, it's just not at all surprising when one is bad. And it is not meaningful, and it does not actually... I mean, it would be better if the ending cutscene hadn't been really stupid, but I cannot imagine a set of circumstances under which it was awesome. And so I cannot imagine a set of circumstances under which people aren't complaining about it. renders the complaints irrelevant because they were inevitable. I would not want to be in the position of those guys having to try to wrap this story up while still leaving it open for you to do other stuff in the universe, right? Because it's like you can't... I mean, Fallout 3, fucking amazing video game. Like one of the best video games ever. I would go so far as to say, and people complained about the ending of that precisely because it had closure, right? And it's, you give all these, it's like, oh, based on this one decision that you made, the Brotherhood of Steel doesn't exist anymore. Welcome to Broken Steel, the Brotherhood of Steel DLC pack that we just released that this probably totally takes place before that card we showed you. So never mind. Or... What's actually happening is, no, this takes place before any of that shit that happened in the ending happened, because after that ending happened, there wasn't any fucking video game anymore, so there was no way for you to go to the place where this DLC takes place. Because after the end of the game, there's no you anymore, there's no place for you to go. So every DLC is some fucking time travel that goes in before this ending that we're trying to write that incorporates a whole bunch of story elements that we don't know what they are yet.
I mean, the fact that DLC is this weird sort of add-on to a narrative form that isn't really ready for it yet or something like that doesn't mean that you shouldn't strive to make a good narrative, right? Like,
no, I don't think it means you shouldn't strive for it. I mean, I think that it is so difficult as to be effectively impossible.
I mean, if they didn't make it so that you were playing the same character, like if DLC was the same engine playing one of the NPCs or something like that, I think that would make a lot more sense.
Yeah, if you were just somebody else,
I think that may be part of the plan, although I can't swear to it. I feel like I have heard that you're not Shepard in the Mass Effect DLC.
Yeah, and I mean, if it's supposed to take place after the ending, if it was supposed to, like DLC that was supposed to take place after the ending of Mass Effect 2, the choices that you make can result in anyone getting killed or everyone getting killed at the end of that game. So it's like, you know, there being a single end to a branching storyline like that does seem kind of impossible, because everything that you do in the future has to assume some canonical thing that happened.
You know, I think of the story in World of Warcraft and how much I really enjoyed being able to partake in the sort of epic storyline quests that they had. You know, not so much like the kill 10 rats stuff, but the ones that were like really long, complicated quest chains. And like that, those were fun stories to read and see the unfolding of. And then, you know, the culmination of it was almost always killing some sort of boss monster or whatever. And then, you know, you'd get a final reward or whatever. And that was really satisfying. I'm like, why is that not something to like strive for in video games, right? To have storylines that are satisfying and compelling. Like why do you feel like all stories are bad?
It's full of situations like that hint at compelling and interesting and cool things that are going on, but like, yeah, I don't know. Like, it just, it seems, it's hard for me to even talk about because it seems so obvious to me that video games are a poor medium for telling a linear story because video games are inherently non-linear.
They don't, not inherently, no.
Choose Your Own Adventure, the stories in Choose Your Own Adventure books are fucking terrible. The environments are cool, the characters are cool, some of the things that happen are cool, but, like, the story is, like, guy goes into series of rooms where shit happens. Like, and, if, you know, it's like that. It's like trying to tell a good story in a medium that you have no control over the pacing and the flow of the story. The only thing that you have control over is the details and the way that characters react to situations, which are enough to make a deeply compelling and emotional piece of media.
Right.
You know, and it's... people simultaneously decry the, like, movification of games and...
the gamification of movies.
And want, you know, a three-act structure with a satisfying ending that puts a bow on everything, but is perfectly customized to their experience of it. And I think you just can't have that. You can finish a story, but you can't finish the story of a guy playing a video game in a way that's going to satisfy anybody. You know?
I don't know.
You can have a really cool boss fight at the end of a video game. You can have a cool sequence that is fun to play. I just don't think that you can have a cutscene that happens after the end of a video game that significantly adds to your experience of having played it. Because having played it is what it is because it's a video game.
So an extra chapter, once you've read a book, if the author writes an extra chapter, that couldn't possibly add to your experience of it because your experience was the reading of it the first time? I'm curious whether there's an analog or not.
An extra chapter in which what happens?
I don't know.
An extra chapter that's another flashback about something?
I don't know.
That happened that's unrelated to the story? Cause those,
or something that
those
happens are after, pretty, after the end of the story. Morning.
Did you ever read the last chapter of Clockwork Orange?
Yeah. But, I mean, that wasn't, like, additional story. That was the thing that got omitted from the movie version or whatever. I mean, that was part of the story of that character's development, right? That was not, like, a little movie about what happened after everything that happened to that character.
Well, yeah. I think though, that it... I don't know. I may be... No, I'm pretty sure there was... The original American edition of the book omitted the last chapter.
Yeah, that might be true. But
so
I,
it's so yeah. The
I only read it after
the fixed that. Yeah, me too. The author did write it all with that, but original readers didn't experience the last bit.
Well, only original American readers. Stop being right. So Americentric. Yeah,
I beg your pardon.
This is a long and boring segment.
I don't know. I'd like to get to the bottom of this.
I'm having difficulty framing my objections to your arguments.
So the problem
maybe
the problem
it's
is
my
that
argument is perfectly unobjectionable.
The problem is that this argument it isn't a very good story, and there's no good way to.
Holy shit! Did you guys hear? There's going to be a Halo 4.
Conan O'Brien's doing a voice
Halo
in
4?
It.
No,
was that not a joke?
What, Halo 4?
Seems like Halo 3 came out a really long time ago.
Yeah, they did some other stuff.
There was Reach.
Yeah.
There was some, like...
There was Halo.
Is it not Aqua Bungie's Fresh. Anymore? Is that correct?
I don't know.
I think Bungie is off doing other stuff now.
The Trials HD people released that video that explained... Oh, it turns out the riddle was...
That thing,
the riddle
yeah.
was some dumb horse shit that wasn't a real puzzle that was in you all the time, you idiots. Hope you enjoyed wasting your fucking time, you dummies. And then flip us off with both fingers. And then... Hop on a little dirt bike and fly to the moon. Yeah, I don't even want to talk about that bullshit. You guys should look it up. Listeners, look up the sweet hidden riddle contest that was in.
It wasn't a contest.
It wasn't a contest. Yeah.
So it wasn't a contest. It wasn't a riddle. It wasn't sweet.
But it seems like they really led people to believe that there was something to find in all of that crap. And then when they finally revealed it was like, nope.
Not really.
The answer to this riddle is the entire riddle.
I feel like that was, I suspect that that was something that was planned out by some guys who read about the Valve ARG but didn't really understand how it worked.
Yeah, or had heard about a puzzle and had never seen one or something. Super Mario Brothers 4 and Pikmin 3 is going to come out on Wii U. And then video game sales are down 25% over last year, this time last year.
I think that's because there wasn't a Halo game.
Maybe.
All right, that's enough news. Fuck the news. The Assignment, Amnesia: The Dark Descent. How scary as shit.
It was scary. It was so scary I didn't even bother to finish it this time.
Was it scary, Riff, or are you lazy?
Both those things can be true.
Shiftless
layabout. I did discover before we started casting that I did, in fact, at some point watch an LP of the remainder of the game that I did not see. So before we started, I went back and flip through it to refamiliarize myself with the things that happened.
Amnesia: The Dark Descent is a scary game.
It is way too scary.
It gets less scary over time, though.
You get kind of immunized.
Yeah, except when suddenly a guy comes into your room and you're playing it with headphones in a dark room and is like, hey, Zach. And you go, what the fuck, man? I was really mad until I realized how dumb it was to be mad at you about that. You were like, I've been knocking for like 5 minutes. It's like, you should have texted me. It's like, I thought about it. I'm sorry. Nobody, I'm sorry.
I didn't know that's what you were doing.
That's how that went.
I wasn't sure what was going on. Then I opened the door.
Yeah, I sort of went home from work early yesterday and just played the entire thing from beginning to end.
Wow.
With only a break for dinner, which took like 2 hours.
I played the entire game yesterday as well, actually.
Pretty scary. You never get to really kill any dudes, which is pretty sweet. You never have a gun. Yep. Sometimes you can throw an apple.
You kill one dude, kind of. It's not an active choice.
Okay. Yeah, it gets... there's like a weird, elaborate side quest at the end.
Yeah.
That's kind of hard. There were a couple times when I had to ask you for help. I needed some hints.
We
went through it in radically different orders.
Yeah, that was kind of the neatest part of it. In analysis was the way in which you had a very different kind of experience than I did of the very last third of the game.
Because it opens these hubs up that have different levels, and you can sort of do them in not arbitrary order, but they're not gated linearly.
Yeah.
And what I like is that you never go into a place and need something from somewhere else. Like, all of the puzzles are self-contained, or they tell you that you need something from somewhere else in order to get through them. You're never stuck trying to solve a puzzle that you can't actually solve.
There was an entire room that I did not get to see because of the order I did things in, which was kind of sad.
If you somehow I managed to get into the chancel before one of the branches of it collapsed. I don't really understand the point of that collapsing. I mean, it's just so that there can be this room with nothing in it. I mean, there's stuff in it, but there's nothing important to the game in it.
I think it is just cool because it's nonlinear, right? Like there's like the basically the last room in the game you get to, you can go there relatively quickly in the last third or whatever and like explore it. But if you wait and you do all the stuff early before you go there, there's a chain of events that gets set off that sort of cuts off a third of that whole phenomenon, like that whole experience.
Man, I was super terrified. So much of what made me scared was the inability to save. Because I would be like, all right, I'm about to do something dangerous. I'm about to do something that has a chance of fucking me up here. I need to say, oh, fuck, I can't save. I just have to do it. I just have to go for it. And that was scary. Like, my video game brain is so accustomed to, like, quick save before you do anything that might be dangerous. But it's like, nope. You can only save and exit. But there's, like, there is no penalty for dying. You never lose any progress at all for dying, which means that somebody posted, like, a 42-minute speed run of this game. And I'll bet that involves some deliberate dying. Because it's like faster to die and respawn.
There were definitely some times when I died and respawned in a place that was pretty far away from where I was
Yeah, but it was always like back wherever you needed it. It just like positions you in front of whatever the next thing you need to do is.
Kind
of. A lot of the way that I found my way around that choir room was by getting killed, and then it's like, all right, I have no idea where I am. I'm just going to go until I find a door, and it was always the door that I needed. So I don't know if I got lucky or if it was doing that trick that I talked about a couple weeks ago where it just puts things wherever you go.
Yeah.
Because that'd be pretty sweet.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
There were a lot of maps on the walls that sort of explained to you the way that levels were laid out.
That was cool.
Yeah.
Like, the number of, like, environmental facets that were just part of the game. Like, a lot of the, like, option, like, you know, diary pages and stuff like that, where they actually, like, especially in the late game, were really valuable for completing quests and stuff like that. But if you just didn't read them, you know, you could still make progress in the game. It's just, it was like there to help.
There weren't any puzzles that I couldn't solve. There were just times when I had to ask you because I didn't want to just waste a bunch of time looking for something in the wrong place. Like the amount of just physical space that opens up to you for the last quest hub
was pretty large.
And it's like, all right, well, there's this stairway that takes a couple minutes to traverse, and I have no idea if the thing that I need is at the top of the stairway in the big area that's open up there or the bottom of the stairway in the three big areas that are open down there. Right. And so I just came and asked you, I'm like, should I be bothering trying to find this up here? Or
right.
That one thing, that the machinery that you had to find that was next to the guy on the rack, I don't think I ever would have found that. I just like it's a sound. So it's a sound cue. It's a puzzle. It's a hidden thing that relies on a sound cue.
Or
in a game that
particular
delights in playing meaningless sounds just to fuck with you.
Or you had to know, like, you had to be looking up, you know, which is a thing.
Sure,
right.
I mean, things are looking up.
I was so the puzzle that I spent the most time on was trying to get
spoilers. But
spoilers. By the way. It was trying to get to the blocked off section of the study. Because I'd explored the floor pretty thoroughly and couldn't find any like hidden passageways or levers or anything like that. And I looked up at the ceiling and I saw these sort of like tracks that looked like a segment of the wall just moved and left these like sort of skid marks. And I was like, ah, God, so how do I get this room to move? And I spent just like an hour trying to figure out how to get this room to move and couldn't find anything. I picked up every object that was around in case it was like a hidden lever object. Like so much of the, like, it was like right next to that anatomy room where there was like all the dog stuff like that. Like so many of the named posters were like dog balance, like, you know, human form balance dog. And I'm like, okay, do I have to stand on the dog? Like, is that what that's trying to tell me?
Like looking for, you were like a madman looking for clues.
Exactly, right? I was like, drawing, putting yarn links between things, like pinpoint pins on the wall.
That's a beautiful mind, buddy.
And so, I had tried to break two of the three windows that were outside this room, and I would punch them and I hit them with chairs and just nothing happened. So I was like, well, clearly it's not to break a window, but it was to break the third window in the room, not with the other two. And that was super frustrating.
But that window
has
the cursor
has a crack.
Turns into a hand when you go over it.
Yeah. And also, yeah.
Right. It's okay. Interactable in a way that just looking at it,
but you can break display cases.
Yeah.
And there are things that, like, they have no hand on them.
No, I just happened to find that. There's also, I was standing in a place where I thought that what was happening was that there was, like, a naked man that appeared and only his dick was interactable. And I was like, seriously? This is weird. And it turned out to be just the distance that I was from it was outside of the range at which the cursor would turn into a hand, except when you were, like, on his crotch.
Oh, okay. Sure.
I was like, I don't really want to click that. Like, there's a lot of dicks in that game.
There were more than one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know what I didn't get? There was that thing where it's like the wall is flimsy here, but not flimsy enough to break with your hand.
Yeah.
And I don't think I think maybe I hit it with an inkwell and it broke. Either that or I just hit it with my hand and it was lying about you not being able to break it with your hand.
I mean, I hit it with a chair. I think you could hit it with anything that was not your hand.
Any object that was not your hand. So if you pick up a feather.
It was more of a test of, do you know the throw mechanic yet? You know?
I don't know if I even threw it. It was Inkwell. Inkwell is apparently The pen really is mightier than the hand. Man, I think one of the scariest moments that I had in the game was just realizing that I had to click to go through a door that the mouse over text said morgue. And I was like, I don't want to go in there.
I think that like strange like servant of Alexander or whatever that, or one of them or whatever that followed you around was the number of times that like that just freaked me out. Like my heart started racing when they were chasing me.
They're like zombie guys.
Yeah. Inevitably I would like try to run somewhere where it was dark and I would have done such a good job of lighting the place that there was just nowhere that was dark.
That was when I quit playing was when you first get to the prison, which was the first level that, that was really, instead of being like a bunch of discrete rooms, it was just a maze of black corridors and torches here and there, so that you had to make that choice between, do I want to be able to see and be sane, or do I want to die because a monster is going to see me?
I kind of wish that the game had been a little clearer about when it was so dark that you were losing sanity and when it was light enough that you were gaining sanity.
You never gained sanity from being in the light.
Really? I thought you did.
No.
Or you just don't lose it?
You don't lose it.
Okay. Never mind.
Anytime you're in the dark, basically, as soon as your vision shifts to where you're seeing things with like a blue cast on them, that's when you're starting to lose sanity.
Hmm.
I thought
that was my eyes adjusting to the dark.
It is, but when your eyes are adjusting to the dark, that means you're losing sanity.
Okay.
And then, the only way to gain sanity is to make progress or to solve puzzles.
Right.
So, I think finding a puzzle object would restore sanity or whatever.
That text took me out of the game a little bit. It was like, you can restore sanity by solving puzzles. And I'm like, right, video game.
Yeah, that was a weird clue. I think if they had just said make progress,
mm-hmm.
I think that would have been enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was annoying.
That puzzle where you had to, the levers with the Roman numerals, really took me out of it also, because nobody would build a machine like that. Like, they did a pretty good job of making things make some kind of sense in fiction.
Yeah.
It was a lot, was it the rest of that machine? No, that was the one where you just had to find rods and cogs and stuff. But there was the machine where you basically just had to do a match of the thing that was on the other side.
Yeah, those puzzles seemed a little weird.
That seemed kind of arbitrary.
The one with the weights on the chains was also like, the granularity was a little too fine. It turns out you just had to kind of get it close.
Yeah, and you heard, there was an audio sound, like an audio cue or whatever.
Was there? I thought, messing with it, I thought there was, yeah, but then I couldn't get it to, I couldn't get it to
happen
reliably.
Very faint.
Yeah.
Very faint.
Again, so much of the sound in that game is not actually important to gameplay or matched up with anything that's actually happening, mm-hmm. that it was weird when sound did become important.
It creates this sort of texture. Like, it's just like the visual sphere. Like, there's tons of objects in that game that are unimportant,
yeah.
but you need those. Otherwise, if the only objects in the game were the important ones, then you would just run over to it and pick it up. Right. In the same way, having
a
varied audio space.
I liked, there was one puzzle that this feels like a thing that came out of playtesting,
mm-hmm.
where it was like, these levers control the noisy machine.
Yeah.
And so you needed to, yeah.
Like, you didn't know what that meant. So the first thing I tried was, the bad guy can hear me more if it's quiet. So I made him as loud as possible. And I went back and I was like, that wasn't what I wanted.
Huh. See, I just tried, in my initial response was to make that as quiet as possible. And then I went back and I thought, I can make it through there. But then it's like, nope, it chops you up.
Oh.
And then you have to,
it still
crushes you.
Except for like that broken window thing, there was one other point where I got kind of stuck. I guess maybe that was the same thing, actually. I couldn't get the last rod, which was in the other part of the study. So I guess that was like the one sticking point for me. And then figuring out how to purify the blood was something that I spent a lot of time looking for, and then was just like, whatever, and went on. And turns out that I was supposed to just go on.
Yeah. I was afraid once it got to the end where there was pretty clearly an optional thing that was going on, because this guy is like, if you don't mind, before you go beat the end boss of this game, doing this other thing. And I, the second and the other time that I had to ask you for help was making sure that I wasn't going to fuck up and advance the game too far. But like, if you don't do that and you move on to the ending phase, do you have to start the game over to get the other ending?
The game has made a bunch of autosaves.
Really?
Yeah. There's like, when you went back to the main menu, you can restore and you can pick any of the autos. Anytime you go from
I thought you could only continue because you can't save but save and exit.
Right.
Like, which implied to me that there was only one save.
There's only one player initiated save, which keeps your actual position in the game. But anytime you zone from one location to another, it saves.
Okay.
So
yeah, because weird, you didn't know until you made it into that laboratory that it even existed.
Correct.
And I don't know if that's because you just hadn't been to the outside of it.
I hadn't noticed the sign.
Okay. Right. Okay, I guess that was it.
So
yeah, it's weird because I was there was one point where that mementos thing had like 9 different things that I was supposed to do.
Yeah, and
I
never got up that high.
What the fuck? Where are any of these? Like, it seems weird that the game would give you that many goals. And there, so then after it ends, underneath the end thing, there's a little 6-character alphanumeric code. And
it's different for each of the 3 different endings.
Yeah, I did a Google search for one of them and found out that it was just part of this like thing where they had put this RAR file called supersecret.rar in the game installation folder, and it was password protected, and the password is the 3 ending strings that are revealed in a sequence, and then it just like contains all this design doc stuff. It had some audio diaries that they didn't end up including in the game, and it had a bunch of concept art, and it had like videos of them using their level editing tools and videos of like early tech demos and alpha playtests and stuff, and it was cool.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet.
I like that. I like that idea a lot.
Yeah.
In the one video, the guy was like picking up a lot of gold pieces, like bags of 10 gold.
Oh wow.
Yeah, and like you found a sanity potion.
Right.
Yeah, just a bunch of
Tropes that they just did cut out,
stuff they got rid of, and like much to their advancement.
Like, sure.
Yeah.
Was stripped down in a way that made it really, really satisfying.
I found myself hoarding resources way more than I needed to.
Yeah, I was trying not to, and then I spent the entire last hour of gameplay with no fucking lamp oil, and it was terrifying. Huh. I had to spend so much time like navigating in the dark.
That sucks.
At the very end, when it's like... The very, very end got just kind of dumb in a way that
the like running from
it ruined everything. It went back in time and ruined the entire experience of playing the game. I'm like, oh, you know what, the first half wasn't scary anymore. Now that I'm just saying the very last confrontation,
very last one,
and then the ending credits music being yakety sax.
there were originally supposed to be a bunch of NPCs in the quest hub areas that would like help you with stuff and give you advice, and I think the only one that they ended up keeping was Agrippa, and that really kind of took me out of it too. Like,
it was creepy
the first time when you spend a whole bunch of time in there and you start hearing his dialogue repeat, it's like, oh god, just stop it, don't, you're reminding me this is a fucking video game, stop it.
What was with all the random bodies that you would find in places? Was that just me being less sane when I went back to a place?
I don't know. There's a lot of like, just there'll be like a flash and then there's a corpse.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember that too.
Fuck.
I assumed it was connected to, I don't know, the weird skin that covers up the doorways and stuff.
That was annoying. I hated the random just hits that you'd get from that shit.
Yeah. Sometimes it does damage and sometimes it doesn't, and you don't really know when it's going to. And I mean, maybe that makes it scarier.
Sure.
They did a lot of things really effectively. The segments where there wasn't anything chasing you felt as tense as the ones where there was, because you didn't know.
Yep.
You know, and it's like, they usually let you relax to solve puzzles.
Did we even say what assignment we're doing? I forget.
Amnesia.
Oh, right. Okay.
That was funny.
Nice. Yeah.
That was funny, buddy. Amnesia: The Dark Descent.
Yeah.
Sequel coming up. Amnesia: A Machine for Pigs.
Yeah.
It says that it is not a sequel, it is an indirect sequel, which is great. Yeah. Apparently there's a sequel in the game, that Justine thing, which is just a different game.
I played a little bit of that.
That's the one I mentioned before. That's the Portal 2.
Yeah, that was the Portal 2 arc one. Yeah. I read.
Oh, it is? Yeah. Okay. Huh. It's pretty neat.
It's more puzzly.
Very puzzly.
It's like it's set up like a test chamber and there's a female narrator. Like it's
There's wow, I wonder if they're lying. She says that there is a way to save each of the people. There's like a person in each one of them that's like being restrained or whatever. And she says there's a way to save each one of them. But now that you're saying that it's like just, it's like a direct portal correlate, I'm wondering if that's just a lie, which would be really funny. Cause I could imagine spending a lot of time trying to solve these things without killing these people. I killed the first two.
I kind of want to play
right away by accident.
I kind of want to play it, so don't spoil anything.
Okay.
Buddy. Yeah, so that was pretty cool. I'm glad that we did this because it gave me an excuse to actually force myself to get past my fear. I remember I got to the place where I remember quitting last time, and I got through it just effortlessly when I had gotten killed over and over and over again before. My experience of playing it this time was pretty different, I realized, because the entire time I was in the wine cellar on this playthrough, never saw an enemy. And it was a constant threat the first time played through. It's really random the way that the enemies are. And I think if you lose them, they just disappear. Like if they lose awareness of you, they're just not there anymore. Because like there was a time in the chancel when I was like, oh, fuck. There's this guy out on this thing and he's walking in a direction and I went and I hid where I couldn't see him. And then when I looked back up, he was just gone and there would have been nowhere for him to go. He was just on a catwalk.
Huh.
Yeah.
Was he too sexy for that guy?
He's going very, very slow. Yeah. There were different guys. You don't look at them closely enough
kidding.
To notice this, but there's several of them in various states of rusty metal having been bolted onto them.
I definitely remember one that had like a knife for a hand, knife for an arm, maybe.
A knife for an arm.
I remember reading
creepy.
Somewhere that the different variations of them have better or worse ability in various senses.
Like faster or
some of them are faster.
Your sense of fast.
Yeah. Some of them are better at hearing you and some of them are better at seeing you.
Your sense of fast, it lets you perceive how long it's been since your victim has eaten. All right. So for the next assignment, we wanted to do something that wasn't going to take very much of our time because we're going to be real busy with work. And so it won't take very much of your time either because it's impossible to actually find and play E.T. the Extraterrestrial for the Atari 2600. This is reviled as one of the worst games in history. I contend that it is not nearly all that bad, that it is kind of misunderstood, and it is no worse than a lot of Atari games that people describe as good. And I want to play that. I want to play it, see if that's still the case in my mind. And I want you guys to play it, you, Kevin, and Riff, to play it, see how you feel. And I want our listeners to play it and see how they feel.
I think
if they're still listening after
your
all that story
mandate
bullshit.
To read the instructions.
Yes, you absolutely
important.
Have to. Because
I spent 10 minutes playing it before this podcast, and I was like, inscrutable.
I'm going to give you an example of some of the critical information that you will miss if you don't read the instruction manual. On a color television set, the game will appear in color. On a black and white TV, the game will appear in black and white.
Yeah. So direct quotation
critical.
From
you can find it. I don't really know where to tell people to get this. Like maybe your brother owns a copy. If your brother is an old ass man,
I mean,
he probably has it in the closet next to his Playboys where all the girls have.
I'm sure our
bush.
Resourceful listeners can find where to find it.
Stella.
Yeah.
That's an Atari emulator.
Yeah. That's
BitTorrent. Don't BitTorrent. It's like 2K. Don't BitTorrent it. Your computer will probably fall apart.
Stella is a cross-platform Atari emulator, and it works very well on Mac, at least. So.
Hey, guys, let's do some listener's mail to make this the longest and most boring episode ever.
Awesome.
It's boring because of the story conversation.
Well, I was going to say, is it only boring because we're not going to end it well?
Benny Nitro says, Jick, do you realize how ridiculous your Minecraft 64-bit story sounded compared to patching a console game? Yeah, I do. I really do. That is an excellent point, listener Benny Nitro. Also, my name is Zach.
What do you mean by ridiculous and compared to? Like,
well,
what does the word is mean?
My complaints about the stuff that I have to go through to patch a console game, at least that is mostly just sitting there as opposed to having to read. You know, this was doing something non-standard. And it just happened to be because it's a PC game, you know, that's like made by fallible human beings on a small team. And, it's, you know, I sort of agree with people's complaints that Minecraft is maybe not the most robust piece of software that's ever been written.
Sure.
Yeah, you know, it just happened to be fucked up, and there was a complicated way of fixing it. I mean, yeah, you know. The other thing is, they're able to release content updates to Minecraft without having to go through a weeks-long certification process from Microsoft to make sure that this kind of shit doesn't happen to them on a console, on a castle. Teal Hydra says, do any of you follow slash give any shits about any sort of professional gaming? I don't give any shits about anything. I think we've made that pretty clear. We watched some pro StarCraft at BlizzCon, and that was fun, but it's not a thing that I could imagine following.
Yeah.
You pay any attention to any of that?
No, I mean, when it first started becoming a thing, I looked at a couple episodes, but I really have no interest in StarCraft in general, so it didn't really catch me.
But I never watch a bunch of people playing Quake 3 Arena on an esports team.
No. Is there anything else that people play besides?
Yeah, there's all kinds of... There's ESPN Modern Warfare 3.
Wii Sports. I hear Wii Sports is a real pro endeavor.
Yeah, did you ever watch that? There was that show on MTV for a while where professional football players would play Wii Tennis against each other, and that was weird. I'm making that up.
Okay.
Sparkle Lynn says, I'm addicted to littlealchemy.com. I'm up to 106 items. Have you guys tried it? That appears to be just like an HTML5 version of Doodle God.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The interface is a little different. Little weird. It's the interactions are pretty different so far. I got up to like 10 items just checking it out so that I'd talk about it. It's pretty cool. I mean, especially if you haven't played Doodle God, like it's fun to mess around with. There's something satisfying about it.
I contend that those kinds of games are fun up until you get into like the teens and 20s of like active things, and then it just gets the possibility space gets overwhelming, and it's just not.
It
fun
gets
anymore.
Boring.
Yeah,
it gets boring to try to
trying to actually like find new stuff gets really annoying.
Kai Wingfield says, I noticed that Stars Control 1 through 3 are on sale for super cheap on GOG.cock, so I got them. I'm pretty sure I've heard you guys say how much you love Star Control 2, and I know it's universally highly regarded, but I haven't heard so much about the first. I have two questions for you. One, you've played both. Do you think it's important I play Star Control 1 before I play 2? Not even a little bit. You get a little bit of the personality of the there's no writing to speak of in Star Control 1. You read the manual. I would suggest reading the manual to Star Control 1 because that gives you some backstory about the history.
Yeah, I did not play Star Control
1. Galaxy. Yeah, you know, you definitely don't need it in order to appreciate it. But like, if you play Star Control 2 and you're like, oh yeah, it's the Spathi. I like the Spathi. I remember them because their ship is equipped with a butt, a backwards utilizing tracking torpedo. Like how that implies that most things utilize the direction that they're going.
Huh.
Two, in general, when you go to play a highly regarded sequel, do you tend to feel compelled to play previous games first for purposes of story or cultural context? Another example for me, Diablo 2, The Witcher 2, Splinter Cell Chaos Theory, Far Cry 2. I did try to play Far Cry 1 so that I could play Far Cry 2, and I really didn't get at all into either of them.
I tend not to bother with the previous ones unless they're really well regarded or if somebody has told me that it's necessary to understand the plot.
As much as I really want to play Half-Life 2, I refused to do so until I could play Half-Life 1, and I know everyone's like says you don't have to.
No,
and
I don't. I suggest that you do.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I think you should play Half-Life 2 and then play Half-Life 1 as a prequel.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
I finally can play Half-Life.
Half-Life 1, really fucking stupid ending. Just like giant space baby trampoline fight. Really stupid. Really, really, really stupid. And yet, like, one of the best games ever. Just putting that out there.
Okay.
You know, it did have a good ending cutscene. I will acknowledge that it had a good ending cutscene. Because it was an ending cutscene where it's like, hey, fade to black, you have no idea what the fuck happened. And it flips you off of both fans. Both hands. Both fans. Also, this is a crazy guy in a suit with fans for hands.
Fans.
I kind of want to go back and play Half-Life 2 again because apparently the first time through, I completely failed to notice, like, 4 out of every 5 occasions where that dude appears.
What dude? Okay. The G-Man.
Yeah.
I think they internally referred to the places where he spawned as the level's G-spot. For Diablo 2, I played Diablo 1 just in the natural course of things. I'm trying to think if there's other games where I sort of started with a highly regarded sequel. There aren't that many examples of it. I never played any Splinter.
I played most of Mass Effect 2 without playing the first one.
Perfect example. I beat Mass Effect 2 only having played maybe 3 hours of Mass Effect 1. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe it just would have fucked everything up for me to learn the stuff about the story in Mass Effect 1. I had these really cool vehicle sections that everybody really loved.
Yeah.
A lot. Mass Effect 2 had this awesome planet scanning minigame.
Yeah, I kind of liked that.
RJ writes, why did two of you buy Macs when you are video game people and Macs suck for games?
That has become much, much less of a thing. And like,
for Mac guys, because you were like using your computer as a tool rather than as an instrument.
I mean, I didn't play a lot of games.
I come from a Macintosh family. I mean, we had...
Your sister, Lisa.
Yeah. Now, we had the original gray shoebox Mac was first introduced in 1984, and we were a Mac household ever since.
Yeah, I mean, I just like...
Uncle Newton.
Now that I am more serious about playing games and being in it, like, my laptop boots into Windows and is a pretty good Windows machine.
Yeah.
Like...
I don't.
You play a lot of that QuickBooks game.
Instead of my answer is instead of booting into Windows the way Kevin does, I boot up my PS3.
Yeah, you've got the console advantage, but I think if you got a new computer, that I would recommend that you also installed Windows on a partition.
I probably would. It's just not wanting to buy a Windows license is basically all it is.
It's like $100.
The company could probably swing that for you, just for games. But I mean,
is it that you just don't want to? You don't want to support Windows?
I think we should just get Microsoft. Yeah, well, a gaming PC for the office, so that you guys can play PC.
Partly just because
PC
I find using Windows to be painful.
Yeah, but you're not. You're only using it to double click on an icon to run a game, and then you're using the game's interface.
Well, yeah.
And it's Windows 7, which is
the game,
a clone of Mac OS.
Oh, is it?
More or less,
sort of a shitty clone. It's not nearly as sane to use. I've gotten to where I kind of like it, though. I've gotten to where I've started considering installing Windows 7 on some of the machines that I'm currently using with Windows XP on them, just so that it's consistent.
I think it has finally stopped telling me that I have automatic updates turned off.
Cool.
Which I'm worried that maybe
it's because it turned itself back on. Every once in a while in the middle of the night, my entire bedroom will turn blue, and I was like, oh, fuck, I forgot to turn my computer off. So it just triggers
some
update thing that switches back to the giant glowing blue screen that is the shutting down Windows thing. There's probably some plants on there or something. Yeah, so that was listener's mail. We got through a bunch of those. That was pretty good.
Sure.
I had a lot of fun. Kevin, if somebody wanted to send us a listener's mail, how would they go about doing that?
The best way is probably through email, vghotdog@gmail.com. You can also tweet us. Some of these questions are from tweets, and that's @vghotdog. You should also follow us on Twitter if you haven't already, which most of you haven't. I don't know what your problem is. We will post so many good, exciting video game anecdotes if we have more people following us. And you can also
chicken and egg problem. This is what they call the @chicken and egg problem.
Yeah, and then you can check us out our forums at videogameshotdog.com. And that's it.
They're pretty forums.
They are.
All right.
We got some questions from the forums. All right. I've had fun doing an episode of Video Games Hot Dog with you guys.
Yeah, it's been a good episode.
Yeah,
sorry for all the yelling.
Sorry the ending is so disappointing. Have a great week, everybody.